White Rocket Entertainment, podcast number 616.
You're listening to the AU Wishbone, almost credible sports discussion on the White Rocket Entertainment Network.
The Auburn crowd can smell it. They can taste it. They can almost see Minneapolis.
I'm not even hungry and I can taste it.
The Auburn Tigers, for the first time ever, are going to the Final Four.
Hello and welcome to the AU Wishbone, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment and by people like you, the Auburn family, which is not a very happy family right now. The AU Wishbone family, neither of them. Our Patreon.com family, which hopefully we can cheer up a little bit, or at least have some healthy conversation with. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and I'm joined as always by my co-host.
I'm John Ringer.
So John, the great 2021-2022 basketball team's run has come to an ignominious end, and I'm sure nobody, you know, in our group, our fan base, is happy about that at all. It wasn't quite what we'd hoped for, but it is what it is, and we kind of have to face it and deal with it and then move on to the next thing. And I guess that's what we'll do part of the time tonight, is just kind of face it and deal with it so we can move on.
That's right. That's where we are. That's what we need to do so that we can appreciate the larger thing, is deal with the immediate pain.
Right. And I think there's a lot to appreciate. And I mean, there have been, let's put it this way, I don't want to lose sight of all the good that we had this year just because of the way a couple of games went in March. It's not how you want things to go, of course, but they did. And there are reasons, and we'll talk about that. There are reasons we know, there are reasons we can guess at, and there are reasons that we don't know. But I don't think there's any reason to panic. It's just situation worked out the way it did. And there are dozens of other teams, literally, in the NCAA tournament that if we had gotten them, we'd have won by 30. It just kind of worked out really funky for us, and here we are. But we don't want to lose sight of all the good, because I can't think of many times in my Auburn-loving life that I was as happy day-to-day, moment-to-moment, as I was at the height of this team's power in January and February. I mean, that it was just a good time to be alive.
Amen. It was, and I've seen it compared to the 2013 season, football season.
Yeah.
And I think that's fair, because it was fun in unexpected ways, and it was this kind of joyride, and we were all on it. And so, yeah, I don't want the bad taste in my mouth to take away from the good things, in the same way that I don't let the Florida State game and the outcome of that make me feel bad about the kick six or the miracle Jordan Hare. Like, I don't.
Right.
Not for a moment.
They're two different things. I mean...
Or going back and watching this, you know, flatten Missouri.
Yeah. Oh, so fun. Yeah. Well, and it's interesting that in the case of the 2013 Auburn football team, we were just gearing up to write a book. And then we said, we don't want to write a book anymore. But this is a little bit different. I mean, I think we can go ahead and let the cat out of the bag at this point. Now the season's over. We have been working on a book for a while. We're going to continue working on it. The plan was to get a book about modern Auburn basketball, going back to Sonny Smith, to get it done in time for the end of the season, assuming the end of the season would still be a couple of weeks away. And we might have been able to pull that off. It would have been tough. You know, we've been working our fingers off. It wouldn't have been as good. It wouldn't have been as in-depth. It would have been rushed. But it would have been out when everybody wanted it, and that was the number one goal. Now, I think we don't need to lose our sense of urgency in the terms of wrapping it up and getting it put together. But we can be a little more careful, have a little more in-depth, you know, and not try to, like, shove it out the door with typos and, you know, not fully exploring all the things we need to explore. So we're thinking now it'll be a little while before we finish it and get it out, but I think you guys will enjoy it. I just hope that people still care and are excited enough about Auburn basketball, you know, after the way things ended, which is what we're going to talk about. So, you know, your first note here, a whole section is the game versus Miami, immediate reaction. So you tell me about your immediate reaction.
I want to say this. My immediate reaction is still pretty raw.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a reason we do this podcast on Mondays, and it's because football, college football games are on Saturdays, so we have time to process them.
That's correct.
The basketball game finished less than 24 hours ago right now. And so I'm still working through the anger, denial, bargaining curve. And I'm not there. I'm not to acceptance yet. You know, I was, I think I was in shock when it ended. And then I was really sad for, you know, last night and this morning. Really sad. It bothered me. Just because it was so fun. I wanted it to keep going.
Oh, yeah.
And I wanted it for the players and you know, the coaches and the staff. I wanted it for them, right? I wanted them to keep going. And so that was frustrating. So I think but also losing the way we lost. Not just that we lost. Like, if we had lost and Kessler and Jabari Smith had a great game and our guards had scored 8 points on, you know, 3 of 30 shooting, I wouldn't have been – it would have been different, right? Now, I want to say this. Like, I was a little more concerned going in about Miami as an opponent. Because of the style of play. I think Southern Cal is a little bit like Auburn as a team. They have some big guys, and they kind of build their whole team around them. And Miami kind of took them apart. So it did worry me a little bit. But also, like...
And both games were similar.
Yes. Well, except Southern Cal had a good offensive game against them. They shot
they
well and stuff, but it just didn't matter because they couldn't stop them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They play a weird offense, a different offense from the Davidson coach's offense, and I think it's not something we've ever seen or defended against, and I don't think we did a good job against it, and I think we didn't do a good job against their defense either. So
no,
but that was my immediate reaction. So what was your immediate reaction?
All right. Well, I'm going to roll this into a larger, quick discussion about my overall philosophy of when your team loses, because I've developed this over the last several years, and it's gotten me through a lot of bad stuff, you know, as we know all too well, as we know. But
I have no idea why you would need such a philosophy, man.
Yeah, being an Auburn fan, imagine that. But first, about this game, I was not shocked or surprised. I was hopeful that we would win. But the way things have been going, really beginning with the Arkansas loss, and it just seemed like people figured out how to defend us. We've had to fight a lot harder to win games than we did the first half, the first two-thirds of the season. And I knew that this was like an odd duck or an odd hurricane, an odd ibis, I guess, is the correct, you know, that what Miami was. And when they said, you know, that, you know, Miami turned the ball over like 3 times against USC, and USC turned the ball over like 20-something times, I'm like, oh, no, because we tend to kind of do that too and then try to overcome it. And then when, you know, Jabari couldn't hit the broad side of a barn and all of Kessler's little layups went in, I thought, well, this is Texas A&M all over again. And so I kind of watched the entire game with an attitude of, something's got to change or we're going to lose. But I kept thinking something's going to change. We're going to rally. We're going to get it together. We're going to make a run like we've done so many times. And then once it got down to about 5 minutes to go, and it just felt like we were trading basket at our best, right? We made the run right before halftime to close within one. And I'm like, all right, we're going to come out in the second half and we're going to turn it on. And we came out the second half and immediately got down even deeper in a hole than we'd been in the first half. And at that point, I started to think, well, yeah, it's, you know, we're going to really have to rally now. And when it got to about 5 minutes to go, the best we were playing, we were just trading baskets with them. It was like 12 ahead, 10 ahead, 12 ahead, 10 ahead, 8 ahead, 10 ahead, 12 ahead. I'm like, you know, we've got to have stops and turnovers, and they just weren't turning the ball over. And they were driving and making layups anytime they wanted to, and we couldn't do anything about it. And so, it seemed like our best lineup, and I don't want to go too far into the details now because we're going to talk about this, but it felt like our best lineup was when we had number.
Jalen Williams.
Yeah, Jalen Williams and the guards out there, because they seem to match up better. When we put our bigger players out there, they just seemed overwhelmed.
Well, let's just go all in on the Miami game because we're here. I think.
Well, we're going to. But I got to
do your philosophy.
I got to do another thing. Yeah. All right. So you said, you know, you're still kind of feeling bad about all that, and I totally respect that, and I totally get it, and that's the way I've always been. But, and I'm not trying to say I know anything anybody else doesn't know, or that I'm better than anybody else, or anything like that. I'm just going to tell you this is kind of how I look at it. This is how I cope. Okay, and take from this what you will. It's just how I cope. And again, it may work for you, it may not, or anybody else, but this is just what I do. Is, you know, you're talking about the various stages of grief and kind of moving toward acceptance. And what I've started doing is just immediately forcing myself into acceptance. And if I think about any of the other stages, I just immediately override it and go, no, it's because Van's philosophy of when your team loses is it's not worth making yourself feel worse than you already do. So I just made this decision a couple of years ago that I'm going to love and be inordinately happy when a group of young people do something athletically that makes me happy. I'm going to be inordinately happy, illogically happy. Why should I care, right? Well, I am. But when they lose, I'm not going to be inordinately upset over what some young people did playing an athletic event 1,000 miles away from me. I'm just not. And so, it seems like, you know, I always refer back to Louis Grizzard saying that winning should feel better. He said, losing hurts worse than winning feels good. And that immediately struck a chord in me, and I said, it shouldn't. Winning should feel better than losing hurts.
Yes.
And I've always tried to live up to that, to enjoy winning more than I hate, more than I suffer from, not hate, because you hate to lose and you don't want to lose. And I'm not saying you should accept losing. No. That's not what I'm saying at all. I'm saying, how do you personally, internally deal with it to live your life? Okay. And I'm not going to let an outcome of a sporting event harm my quality of life at this stage in my life. I'm just not. And so, like, I as soon as the game was over, I went, well, that's kind of what I was afraid of. Okay. And I started reading a book or something. And when I got up the next morning, I thought, oh, we played that basketball game last night. Oh, we lost. Well, that was so much, you know, so much for that. I enjoyed the season. I hate that it's over. And now we're turning the page. And that's just the only way I can deal with it, because otherwise I would be miserable. I was so miserable after that Florida State game that you mentioned, the 2013 Florida State. I was so miserable for weeks. And I just, after that, I said, I can't do this anymore. I can't let myself feel this bad about something I have no control over anymore. You know, if it's something I have control over, then maybe. But I just can't let myself be this miserable over something I have no control over.
And I 100% agree. I'm not where I was with the Florida State game or where I was. Like, I remember being really unhappy, like, after we lost the stupid Georgia Tech in 2003 and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I'm not going to be unhappy about a sporting event like I was about those again.
Yeah.
And so I'm not in the same place with this game that I was with those. But it's harder for me to do the push it away thing. I just have to, I think my ability to process it has gotten better.
So. Oh yeah, exactly. Well, yeah. Maturity and age brings all kinds
better
of
perspective.
Yeah. 100%. And again, I'm not saying I'm doing anything better than anybody else. I'm just saying this is how I cope. It's the only way I can, because I do care. You know, like you, I care so much. Like all of our listeners, they wouldn't be our listeners and listen to this show and our patrons that actually support us financially if we didn't all care way, way much. You know, that wouldn't be the case. And so yes, we all do. But you have to find a way to make it to keep it from making you miserable and ruining, yes, everything else in life. You just have to compartmentalize it. And that's the main thing, I think. I just try to compartmentalize it and put it in its place. And I don't, like I say, I want to make sure I'm making this clear. I don't want that it doesn't matter. It matters a tremendous amount. And I hate that we lost. And I wanted this team to keep going. And I loved this season. It was so great. But And the meme things and all, you know, all that was just such a great, we've never done anything like that with football. It was just, it made us so happy. And that's wonderful. But it's over now, and there's nothing we can do about it other than to just not let it keep hurting us over and over. It hurt me at the time, and it's over. I hate it for the players most of all. We're just on the sidelines. I hate it for them most of all. I saw somebody on one of the internet email groups today saying that they didn't think our players looked like they wanted it or cared. And I'm like, I don't know what game they were watching. Did you see KD Johnson?
Yeah, I was going to say, you tell that to KD Johnson's face. Come on.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, if KD was a Green Lantern that uses willpower to be powerful, he could have a Green Lantern ring that could, you know, blow up the Death Star. He's so powerful with that.
Yes.
So he was out there screaming at him and encouraging him and everything. I mean,
And I would say, like, to that person, I think some of them, that was part of the problem, and especially as the game went along, they tried too much to do, like, the I'm going to save us thing.
They were looking for the 20-point shot.
Yes, but also just like, it's not working. I have to do something. Yeah. I can't let this happen.
Yeah, they kind of fell apart as a team toward the end. But I think at that – and I didn't like that. But I think at that point, there wasn't a lot we could do anyway. And so I didn't blame that for the loss. They were just – they just turned into kind of like playground ball at the end, where each individual was trying to do everything to win. I want to say something about Jabari Smith. He looks very impassive a lot of the time, but that's part of his strength, I think, is that he has a very even keel. It's just weird to see an 18-year-old kid with such an even keel that you think maybe he doesn't care. It's not that. It's that he's just so smooth and so calm. You know, he has what a lot of those great athletes do, which is the ability to kind of stay in the game and not let his emotions mess with him. He's kind of the opposite of a John McEnroe, you know. And so, and I say that, and of course he says,
"You can't be serious, man. You cannot be serious."
And I am serious. I think that's part of his strength. That's part of what makes him Jabari Smith, is that he's so even. But I don't know, were they defending him particularly a certain way, or was he just having a bad night?
It was both. I think part of the way they were defending him is that anytime he got the ball, they were all over him. They were hacking, swinging, chopping, and they never called it for a second. It was just how they defended him. And so they were on him every second. I think the other thing is, I think they did a good job of pushing our players off the spots they wanted to be to get their favorite shot. They would let him get the ball, but they wouldn't let him get the ball exactly where he wanted to get the ball. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
would get the ball at a slightly different place. And the same with Kessler. Kessler got pushed under the basket a lot, I felt like. They'd let him get the ball down there when he was under the basket. But he wasn't up front in the basket where he has a much better time scoring on people. And so I think Miami did a good job with that. But also I think Miami did a really good job of just like absolutely – you know, slapping at every one of our players all the time when they had the ball, and the officials just let it go the whole game. And that, I think, it bothered Jabari when he was catching and trying to shoot. But I also think, like, he got to a place where he was, because he cares, he was getting frustrated, and he was trying to shoot quicker and from more kind of off balance and not completely set than he has in the past. And he was kind of forcing it a little bit. And I think some of it was the easy shots, right? The shots he and Kessler normally make a foot from the basket, we missed 20 of those.
Unbelievable. So. Like Texas A&M. That's a good point, though. You're right. They did keep Kessler under the goal where he had to kind of reach at funny angles, and you got two or three guys hammering on him, which they weren't calling. Yeah. But that reminded me of another thing, and then I forgot it.
The other thing I was going to say is that it kind of – we thought our size was going to be a huge advantage at both ends of the floor, and they turned our size into a weakness, basically, at both ends of the floor.
Disadvantage, yeah.
And I really think, you know, I'm going to give some credit to Jim Larinaga, because I think that he coached a great game.
He did.
And that offensive system caused us problems. I'm Bruce Pearl's a great coach, and he got this team here, developed this team. But I think Barkley was right at halftime. I think we should have played some zone. That team that beat us, they made 3 three-pointers.
They only made one against USC.
But all their other shots were in the lane. So my thing was just go to zone, put Kessler down in the middle, and say, great, come to the basket. Bring it. We're going to let you shoot from out there. We don't care what you do. And see what happens. And if they get some jump shots and make them, great. But we're not going to give them 20 layups.
which is what they, yeah, what they, and they, well, and that's our defense, but, and that's, you know, when you can break down our defense, of course, we're in trouble. Though we did have some stretches where the defense was actually pretty good and turned
away. Late in the first half, the defense was excellent. We really shot them. We weren't giving them easy shots. We stopped turning the ball over, and that's when we closed the game up.
Right, down to one. But what happened to our offense? And in the whole last half of the season, or last third of the season, because, you know, we had a pretty good off. It's like we started the season, the players hadn't played together. They were rusty. After the UConn game, they kind of came together. And for a while there, we had a great offense. And we were doing things like our famous alley-oop plays to Cambridge and stuff. That all kind of went away. It felt like in the last month of the season, all of our great offensive stuff went away, and it turned into four guys watching while one guy tries to make a one-on-one, one-on-three play.
I think a lot of the things that we did offensively, you know, like in January, that were really good, teams just scouted us, and they knew all our tendencies down to the every last thing. So, you know, as in your example, like when Cambridge went to the spot on the floor where he was going to go get ready for the alley-oop and the kind of the backdoor cut, the teams were waiting on him. They were defending it. Their ball wasn't there, and they didn't give the guards the clear passing lane to get it to him. And I think in the same thing with Kessler, they didn't let him get the ball where he liked to get it, you know, in front of the basket and in places where he could kind of step to the goal and make it happen. And I think Jabari the same way. They didn't let him get the ball kind of at the corner of the foul line on either side and do the shots he likes to do there. And I think that was part of it. I think, you know, they were small, but they were quick. I mean, in my mind, they were offensively and defensively, they were like Barracuda. I mean, they were like Piranha.
Yeah.
And they were just like swarming around, kind of nibbling at us and hacking at us the whole time at both ends of the floor, just kind of cutting and slashing. And we were, you know, basically like a, you know, a huge guy with a two-handed sword trying to fight a thing of piranha. And we couldn't hit them, and they could hit us and could do damage to us. So I think it was a problem. I think we either should have gone – I think there were two things we could have done. One was, you know, on defense, go to a zone. But also I think offensively we could have gone to a smaller lineup. We could have gone to the three-guard lineup and played – we could have played Jalen Williams out there, you know, at center. Even with the way he was playing, we could have taken Kessler out, put him in at center, and play he and Jabari together some with the three guards. And that might have been our best lineup for that game, and we never tried it.
Jalen was so hot. I mean, maybe it was, like you said, they scouted us so well that it was the unexpected thing that was working.
Yes. Yes. I think it was. I think they knew us inside and outside what we were going to do and what we liked to do. That's like, again, that the pick and roll play we ran a million times out of with Kessler at the top of the key that worked so well for about 10 games in a row. Like, no team was going to let us do anything with that in the NCAA tournament. They were all over that. The minute he started going towards that, they knew exactly how they were going to defend it and not let us have any success. And we just needed to do different things.
Yeah, well, how many times over the last month or two have I said in tournament play, it's guards, guards, guards. And this is just like, you know, our 2019 team, maybe, I don't know if they could win a game against this team just in January straight up, but in a tournament, I'd take the 2019 team every day because of Jared and Bryce. They made the difference, and this team just didn't have the same consistency and, I don't know, accuracy at guard, the ability to create scoring.
They definitely were. We got a long way to go as a 3-point shooting team, right?
Yes.
There was a real weakness.
Yes.
And so when the inside game was the foundation of the whole offense, when the expectation was Jabari and Kessler are going to get theirs and the guards will be complementary pieces, but then Jabari and Kessler don't get theirs, then the whole offense kind of evaporates, right?
Yeah.
So that was the thing that shocked me, like, them being kind of non-offensive factors was mind-boggling.
So, let's see. Anything else about the game itself?
I think the other thing, they talked about this a couple times during the game, I think it really matters, is the experience gap. Like, they had a bunch of fifth and sixth-year seniors on the Miami team.
They did.
They had about seven guys that had played 4 or 5 years of college basketball. So they had a bunch of basically like 22-year-olds, and we had a bunch of 18-year-olds. And I think that mattered because they weren't fazed and they weren't intimidated, and they knew what to do in different situations because they had so much basketball experience individually and as a group. And I think sometimes when things went wrong for us, we didn't have that experience to back up on. And as a reminder, like you were talking about the Bryce Ajere thing, they were that way because they went through 2 years before of getting to that point.
Yes.
It didn't happen. They didn't show up and were that.
No.
It took 2 years of up and down play to get to the Final Four season. So I think that's part of this team. This Auburn team as a group was very young and had played some basketball together, but not a lot. And I think to me, that was the biggest difference in this game, was just the experience of the Miami players versus our guys.
Well, it's just one more reason that I was not shocked and surprised the way it came out. I went into this tournament knowing that we had serious deficiencies and potential pitfalls that were somewhat camouflaged by individual athleticism and individual achievements and abilities. And, you know, this was a team that could win big or lose big, or just lose, just depending on how things played out. They could have lost to Jacksonville State there for a while. They were not, you know, they had to kind of get it together. Yeah. And so that's, I think, why I wasn't really surprised. And I was really wanting USC by the end of the Miami-USC game. I was wanting USC to win because I felt like we had a better chance against them. And I do think that a lot of it, you know, like I say, there's two things in a tournament like this: guard play and matchups. And matchups is the luck of the draw.
Yes.
And, you know, if we had gotten USC instead of Miami and beaten them, we'd get Iowa State, who, again, I think we probably would do pretty well against. Mm-hmm. And we would be in the Elite Eight. So, you know, and a good shot against Kansas, I think. So it just sucks that we caught a team that was so weird and gives you so many problems this early and brought our season to an end. It's like if we'd been in the same bracket as Virginia, you know, in 2019, then that thing could have ended really quick. And, I mean, you know, we could have lost to New Mexico State very, very easily in that year. Yes. And been out in the first round. So, so, you know, tournaments are capricious beasts, and you can't take anything for granted. And it really is almost like throwing darts at a dartboard, what round you go out in or you know, you hit the bullseye. And so I just don't think that we should be so down on these players and the coach and all that because, you know, you roll the dice and it comes up a certain number and not another.
Well, it's 100% the truth that's the nature of tournament basketball. But that also that you do not let the sour taste in your mouth kind of ruin the joy of the whole season.
Absolutely.
Don't. It's too important.
Absolutely. We mentioned the Jacksonville State game. I don't have a lot to say about it at this point. It's off in the distance, I think, really. There was the injury, the horrific. Breaking your teeth on somebody's elbow is up there with the worst injuries to your own team you could possibly ever be involved in, I think.
That's it. I just think the one takeaway I had from that game was the great defense, and then we ran a set offensive play to get Katie Johnson an easy, good shot the very first possession so that he didn't have that Texas A&M pressure hanging over him. But it was gone. So he scored, and then he was like, okay, I'm fine.
And you could see how excited he was. Well, always, but you could definitely see how excited he was. So what are you thinking about the tournament the rest of the way? I mean, it's –
Well, it's I think the other thing is maybe the SEC isn't as good as I thought it was.
Yeah. Well, Arkansas got a better draw maybe than the rest of us did. But
I thought Tennessee would win too.
Oh, yeah. I had them in the Final Four, I believe.
Yeah, I think I did too. And I know I had Kentucky, but I enjoyed every minute of that game.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Blow my brackets up if it takes Kentucky out along the way or Alabama, which they also
went
out.
Amen to that, so.
Yet another chapter in that very long book called Alabama Loses to Notre Dame at Sports. I really enjoy that book. It's a good book. I got a report, speaking of the tournament, on our current brackets, right? We have over 70 of our patrons and associated members of our network in the brackets playing. And going, I'd written it up going into Sunday night, and then I wanted to compare. This is how much it, how quickly it can change. Going into Sunday night, I was tied for third among the 70. You were tied for 20th, and Boris doesn't even want to talk about it. He was in 36th. But after Sunday night, I'm all the way down into a tie for 10th. You and Jared have moved up into a tie for 5th. I don't know how that happened. Well, y'all must have gotten everything right except the Auburn game. So our current leader is Clinton Stewart, not coming through that door, number one. Danny Flax, some kind of doomsday machine, and Carl Von Drunker and Winston B., who has Kessler block my brackets, is tied for 2nd. So that's kind of where things stand right now. We have a couple more weeks to go, obviously, but I feel like I'm still in contention in 10th, but it sure can change in a hurry when just a couple of games go against you, and I had a couple go against me there. So I think everybody missed the Auburn one, though, so we can't really blame that one.
Nope.
Couple of things about football before we get to our thanking our patrons and our listener questions and stuff.
Yeah, just, you know, we're going to talk more about football in the future, so brace yourselves.
It's coming back. For better or worse, it's coming back.
Yeah. Spring practice is underway. There was, you know, and I think it's been a little bit of a different tone. I'm going to say that.
Well, let me ask you this. Has there ever been a spring leading up to A-Day that you had as mixed feelings as maybe, I don't know how you feel, but I have, like, it just feels weird. You know, usually it's like anticipation, like, oh, what do we got this year? What are we going to do? Even with Gus at the worst, I still felt like, oh, well, you know, he brought in a new offensive coordinator. Oh, we got a new quarterback. You know, we got a new running back. There was always something. And this year I'm just kind of like, well, we'll see. You know, I guess we'll see. I mean, how do you feel going in? I don't know.
I think one thing I would say is the other thing that's going on is there's a whole bunch of recruiting going on right now.
Yeah.
There was a lot of good high school players on campus last weekend. And I think, again, I'm not saying recruiting is, you know, going to shoot to the top and beat Texas A&M and Georgia and Alabama, but I think it's gotten better over the last couple of weeks. And I think they've changed kind of how they're doing things. And I think it's working a little bit better. So
I certainly hope so.
And I think in the comments that Harsin has made publicly and in the you know what we've seen from other people, I think there's a little bit of a different tone than we heard last year. You know, more positive and that kind of stuff. So I think it's something to keep an eye on. I'm not saying that means anything other than I think he's kind of heard some of the feedback of how he needs to change his behavior about stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that matters. I mean, to me, you know, we're going to do a bunch of talk about spring practice over the next few weeks, but I think there's things like, you know, I'm genuinely interested in the quarterback race. I'm genuinely interested in what's happening with the young wide receivers. You know, I'm genuinely interested in the players that we just signed, you know, and how they're doing. So I think all those things are interesting storylines, and that's what I want to kind of think about and talk about over the next couple of weeks.
Well, we'll have the opportunity because
yes,
won't be any basketball to talk about suddenly. So there we are. But yeah, we'll have fun with it. We'll do what we can. We've got a guess the game. Do we usually do the guess the game before before the break or after?
After.
Okay. Well, then let me go ahead and thank our patrons. If our conversation tonight was of any use to you at all, I hope it was in terms of dealing with the whole situation. And man, I mean, you know, I could give myself over to just lying on the floor and screaming and blood-curdling crying for a week, and that would be perfectly fine, but I'm just not gonna. But dang it, I'm so disappointed. But we move on, and I hope that conversation was of use to everybody else. Maybe it's just that John and I have gotten so old that we've gotten so mature in our ways now that we can deal with things better than when we were.
Is part of that maturity having experienced a lot of losses?
Oh, God. Well, it's not like we're Vanderbilt fans, but then it's also not like we're, you know, Duke or, you know, UNC or whatever.
Say, Vanderbilt fans can't be hurt by losses because they never expect to win.
No, that's right. That's right. We've always said that, John. We've always said that we win just enough that we expect to win, but we lose enough to keep us miserable half the time. It's a tough road to hoe.
It's easy being fans of other schools.
Yeah. it's easy to be a fan of like Alabama football or Duke basketball
or Vanderbilt football,
right? Because you know what you know what to expect. Yeah, we ride the dang roller coaster. We've talked about that a million times. Okay, so we thank you guys for letting us come here and do this therapy with each other as well as with you. It matters a lot. If you want to help out, go to www.auwishbone.com, www.auwishbone.com, and be part of the family and join in. And you can do things like participate the next time we do a tournament bracket like we're doing right now. We also just started our Fantasy Formula One competition, which I'll report on in a minute. And we've got other things going on as well. So go to www.auwishbone.com. Click on the big orange button to become a patron for as little as a dollar a month. So we appreciate more. So our Fantasy Formula One, and then I'm going to thank the patrons specifically, but our Fantasy Formula One standings, we have 21 teams competing this year, including your eldest, which is awesome. So, so happy. Currently right now, it's just what I was afraid of. The folks that were really good at the end of last season have started up really good. I won last year, but man, one of them, I think it was Daniel O, was like right on my tail in the rearview mirror and getting closer every week. And if the season had gone on for like one more race, I would have finished second probably. Well, he's off in first place. Scuderia Furia di Pavoni. I don't know exactly what that is in Italian. I'm sure it's something funny. Because I know that Eric M's Scuderia Aquila de Guerra is War Eagle. Scuderia War Eagle in second. Teamy McTeamface of Daniel is in third. Alexandra Ringer is tied for fourth. So good for her. Good job. Mira's teams are in seventh and eighth. I am in 10th and 19th. And that is because I made the critical mistake of putting Red Bull and McLaren people on my team, and both, well, McLaren just had a horrible race from start to finish, and Red Bull was right there until the last couple of laps, and then they just literally blew up. And so, oh gosh, so I've kicked the McLarens off my team, but I'm going to hang on to the Red Bulls, assuming they can stop their cars from blowing up. So we'll see. Anyway. So let me thank the patrons as I failed to do a second ago. We have to thank, Chris and Clinton Stewart, Carl Von Drunker, Dr. Crackham, Patrick Hayes, Samuel Salvatore, Bradley Blackman, Daniel Odom, Gary Grant, a.k.a. AU Fan at KSC, Logan Chilton, Matthew Flowers, Michael Kirshner, Phil Amthor, Richard Stevens, Steve Trawick, Susan Trawick, Trombone Tiger, Willie Carden, Ann Kangian, AU Falling Up, Ben Bloodworth, Brett Wiggins became a patron and joined the... Oh, I see. He's saying, Brett Wiggins, become a patron and join the AU Wishbone family. I know you are listening. Thank you, Preston. I like peer pressure in our mentions, in our patrons.
Nice. Yeah.
Good use of the thing, yeah. Bruce isn't harsing around. Chris Hilton, who bids you a hearty War Eagle. Chris, he's the artist formerly known as Chris the Hilton. Chris Thrash, Clay Henson, Dan Thompson, David Hegler, Earl Ricks, Eric Morgan. There's one of my nemesis on the track. Bobby, George Gaston, Jacob and Robin Fleming, John Otsuki, Catherine England, Kevin Smith, Mickey B, Old Mrs. Miracle Medical Staff, Owl Go Rhythm and Blues. Oh, nice. He's added on the blues. Paul Miles, Phil Davis, Reynolds Wolf, Rich Reimer, Rusty Owens, Sarah Brown, Steve Harlan, Theodore Gary. This may be the year that the softball hitting improves to the point that Mickey Dean's critics quiet down. Bob Sammons. You got it, Bob. Maybe so. I hope. let's see. War Eagle Always. WDE Richie. On to page two. We should all change our name to Smoke Weed Every Day and have Van spam the soundboard. No, we should not do that. Wes Atkinson, William Morgan, Wilson Beard, Winston Body, Auburn Blue, Blake Heron, Boris the Tiger, Brandon Smith, Carter Glaus, Cato the Barner, Colby Butler, Corey Smyre, Darris Benton, David Simpson, Die Bama, Eric Mahan, Helping Van Upgrade His Insulation, Hugh Anderson, Jalen's Front Teeth, oh no, Josh Teal, I figured that they'd left and actually formed a patron account. Josh Teal, Kevin Kenoy, Kevin Mahan, Lane Middleton, listen to hellbentatl.com and
smoke weed every day.
That's right. Melissa Blackstone, Mike Finley, Papa Todd, Patrick Williams, play tough defense, protect the ball, take good shots, rebound, says Danny. Very good. I think if Sonny Smith ever becomes a patron, his will say, defense without fouling, defense without fouling. Randall Walker, Rob Morgan, Russell Milling, Sarah Hines, Sasquatch, Shane Bailey, Shannon Butson, Snowdog, Tim Pittman, Timothy, Tony Perry, Wiggle87, insert favorite soundboard audio.
And we got to get better at celebrating.
Alex Nguyen, alum of a basketball school. Well, up until this week, yeah. At least we're still undefeated in the first round of the tournament. You know, it's true. We've never lost in the first round of the NCAA tournament.
You are incorrect, sir.
Oh, except for Charles.
Yeah, I was going to say, we have won 10 in a row in the first round of the tournament.
But
our last round loss was...
the very first one.
Charles Barkley in the first round to...
Richmond.
The Richmond Spiders.
That's right. That was the very first time we ever got in the NCAA tournament. We lost in the first round. That's right. I forgot about it. All right, so Auburn Elvis, Barles Charkley, Ben Amos, Ben Hanshew, and finally Ben Riggis, Brian Albanese, C. Braun, Charles Mooney, Chris Como, Colonel Dad, Construction Tiger, Daniel Barnett, Elizabeth Donald.
And we got to get better at celebrating.
I'll buy this for a dollar. James Taylor, Jason the Weasel Skull Albrick, Jeremiah Schumann, John Samuel Schinker, Jingleheimer Schmidt, John Stubbs, John Zavachin, John Soundboard, Joey Miller, Joseph Iliff, JT Jarhead, Justin Bean, Kenneth Brent Rains, a.k.a. Auburn Dad for life. Let's shock the world. Man, I wish we could have. Mark Squire, MVP Captivating Kathy Bright, Paul Bankson, Robert Drain, Royce Alvarez, Russell Souther, Ruth and Darren Sutherland, Spanky having trouble with my bracket. Who knows? Who knows?
Someone knows. God knows.
God knows.
Oh, Stephen Thompson, Trevor Johnson, Brant Rumble, and Chris, plus our one-time and anonymous donors. You know what my name is on the brackets right now?
You sit at my table.
That's right. Somebody else said had one similar to that. All right. So go to www.auwishbone.com. We appreciate all of you so very, very much. And now it's time for Guess the Game. You ready for Guess the Game, John?
Bring it on.
All right. Let's see what Jared has for us. Have to move a bunch of windows aside to get to it. So here we go.
And John, the rest of the AU Wishbone family. This is Jared Albrick, the yard sale artist, a.k.a. Jinxie Jared, here with Guess the Game number 45. You asked for it, you got it. In the last episode of the AU Wishbone, you said, hey, maybe we should have a basketball Guess the Game before the tournament's out, and I already had one in the works.
Ah.
So without further ado, let's give a listen to this basketball version of Guess the Game.
Enjoying what they're seeing from the bench players from Auburn.
Heck of a drive and finish. Took the contact, never took his eyes off the rim. Out of Mountain Brook High School. Tough area, Mountain Brook. I don't know if you've been there.
No. With a three-point play. They were going home happy. Now they're going home delirious.
All right. I'll see you guys in the hint file.
See, I know what it is. And okay. The difference is you listen to Sonny Smith every game.
Okay.
And I listen to the TV broadcast.
Okay.
That's the TV broadcast. That's Jay Billis. I believe, I want to say, they did two games this year, right? Where the ESPN people came to Auburn and did the game, right? One was the Kentucky game.
I know that one, yeah.
And there was one earlier than that where they did we had a noon Saturday game and they did that one.
Okay.
I
just didn't have enough information there to make any kind of a guess. So if you know something, let's hear it, because I don't know.
No, I'm working it. So it's either the Kentucky game or the other game, because I remember this joke. He made the joke about Mountain Brook being a tough neighborhood.
Oh.
because and so what happened was that was one of the walk-ons. It was at the end of the game when Auburn won, and they put the walk-ons in, and he made a shot. Okay. And Jay Billis was like, "That kid's from Mountain Brook. That's a tough neighborhood, Mountain Brook."
Tough neighborhood. Jeez.
So then in the next game, I think he made another Mountain Brook joke about, you know, how you, you know, you get run over by somebody's Maserati or whatever in Mountain Brook. So I think, I think it was the first home game. Did we play Alabama on a Saturday when we played the home game with them?
It could have been. They were ranked a lot of the year.
I'm trying to, because it was, I want to say it was, we had the big Kentucky game. Was there another home, big home game like after that?
I don't remember.
So let's just say, well, so we could go to the hint file, but we'll just guess the Kentucky game.
Okay. Sounds good to me. Sure. Yeah, I don't remember what the other one was, honestly. Let's see.
All right, let's get rid of some of those bleeps and give it a listen.
Crowd enjoying what they're seeing from the bench players from Auburn.
Heck of a drive and finish. Took the contact, never took his eyes off the rim. Out of Mountain Brook High School. Tough area, Mountain Brook. I don't know if you've been there.
No. Carter Sobera with a three-point play. They were going home happy. Now they're going home delirious.
Yes, yes. Good, good. I'll see you in the answer file.
Who?
One of the walk-ons.
Carter Sobera? Okay.
So let's say Kentucky.
Let's just say it. Kentucky. All right. Here we go.
All right, John, Van, if you guys nailed down that this was Auburn playing Alabama this year in 2022, and more specifically, the point where we hung 100 points on them, well, then you guessed right. What a magical moment. Great to see that guy come off the bench and put that 100-point mark on. The crowd went nuts. I went nuts at home, you know, when I watched it, you know, in a replay, because I can't watch them live because, well, we all know why. Anyway, if you have a suggestion for Guess the Game, go ahead and send those to me. I am at Yard Sale Artist, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. It's all at Yard Sale Artist. Or if you're not on social media, you can email me, Jared, that's J-A-R-R-O-D, at theyardsaleartist.com. Until next time, John, Van, War Eagle, and also some more Airwolf.
Yeah, well, that was what you were kind of trying to figure out, and you said Alabama at one point, so I'm going to give us partial credit for that one at least.
I knew.
Yeah, but. Yeah. Well, you never seemed comfortable with Kentucky. You wanted to think of the other game, and you said maybe Alabama, so that ended up being right.
I couldn't remember which one was first.
Yeah, I couldn't.
But
I know we played Alabama the second time after Kentucky, but the first time probably was before. I'm just going to guess, I think.
Because we played them there first.
Okay.
So. Anyhow, right. I may have it backwards, but so that was a good one. I appreciate Jared for doing a basketball one.
Absolutely, yeah. So always does a great job. So I think at this point we're just down to.
Thank you. Order questions to the Prime Minister.
It's time for listener questions. Dun 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 on the AU Wishbone Podcast.
It's a trap.
So, what do we got?
All right. Our first question comes from Jared Albert, the Yard Sale Artist, who we just heard from. This is his question. He says, "Oh, boy, do I have a question for this week. As I look at the AU Wishbone tournament brackets, and I see people who don't have Auburn winning it all, Van Plexico, what the hell, man? Are you out there rooting against your own team so you can win a bracket? What the hell, man?"
He's been giving me crap about that. Not everybody picked Auburn to win the national championship in their bracket. I told you I've had serious doubts and questions all along. Doesn't mean I'm not rooting for them. It just meant that I would have been very pleasantly surprised if they had won it all, but certainly pleasant.
That's fair.
So next time I see Jared, he and I'll be standing there. And he'll say... No, I'll say.
Which funeral is it?
And he'll say.
yours.
That's what's going to happen. I'll be like, hey, right. Jared, whose funeral is it? And he'll go, yours. Yeah. He'll appreciate that, too, as a big Bond guy. So,
all right. A couple more questions. This one is from Auburn Elvis, who says, hey, guys, this isn't a question as much as it is a comment. Looking back at the season, it's obvious the AE Wishbone show failed to live up to its biggest moments. And I think it's time we admit the reason for this is when John started wearing Auburn shirts during the show. The show really started going downhill once all that nonsense started. I realize it was fun to see John wearing those shirts, but I think that we let the fun take our focus off the important parts of what a winning podcast requires. Also, we might want to consider getting rid of the soundboard because it's fun too when the time comes to analyze why the show has problems. Just because they're the easiest straws to grasp, it doesn't mean they are the correct straws. Yeah. So please get rid of everything fun about the show and focus on what's really important, constantly attaining unrealistically high goals on the strength of one dream episode the fans have now taken for granted. Keep on peacocking. All we know.
Please clap.
Yeah, so that was one giant metaphor in case you missed it. Don't be mad at Auburn Elvis for saying, yeah, don't let it go over your head completely. That Auburn Elvis was making a very good point, which is that some Auburn folks last night were basically blaming us all having too much fun for, like, I guess the karma of us losing or something. And no, that has nothing to do with it.
100% correct. Auburn Elvis is 100% correct on this. Like, I don't want to hear, you know, don't have fun, don't mean to other teams, don't do the peacock thing, don't dance and have fun when we're winning. I'm sorry, especially basketball. Like, we're gonna have fun, we're gonna be the brash people, and we really put up the pirate flag this year, and we just took it to other teams. It was glorious, and I don't regret a moment of that,
not a second of it. No, and it has no bearing. I tell you what, we Auburn and the other programs in the SEC have always had a tenuous relationship at best. There are programs in the SEC that just get along with each other and float along like happy little bubbles in a stream. I don't know exactly which ones they are offhand these days. It's like there's a lot more animosity these days, but there are some that don't. But we've always, I felt like, been treated badly by the rest of the conference. And in 2010 was when you and I basically said, you know, when the whole conference tried to throw us to overboard, we said, the heck with all of you, we're just out for ourselves now. And we quit cheering for other SEC programs, we quit the SEC chant, it's us. And this year in basketball really gave us an opportunity to kind of express that on a twice weekly basis, and it felt really, really good in a way that football rarely gives us a chance to do that.
That's the truth. So yeah, I appreciate that email. All right. Absolutely. Got a couple more here. This one's from Bill Miner, who's says, guys, I'm as sad as you are about this unfortunate loss. I'm reminded that these championships are so hard to win by virtue of what one has to win to achieve it and by the sheer luck of the game. That said, which championship would you say is the hardest one for us to win, football or basketball? I would argue basketball is harder because of the games one has to win in order to get to it, and because the inferior team always has a chance if they shoot well compared to a more predictable opponent.
Yeah, there's a lot to that. And Sonny Smith talked about how the rules changes have made the game better, but they've also made it harder for underdogs to win as much as they used to. You know, he said how, you know, the rules changes over the last, you know, couple of decades have actually, or more, have actually kind of given magnification to the stronger teams. But even still, I agree, though, that I think that basketball, there's just more chances for something to go wrong and for you to lose. Here's the thing. In basketball, it's easier and faster to turn everything around and go up, but there's also a lot more potholes where you can go down. Whereas in football, it takes longer, I think, to build up a winning program, but then you can string together a handful of big wins and win the national championship.
Yes. Well, it's a lot more variability and a lot more chance of losing to inferior opponents at basketball.
Yeah.
the top football teams are never going to lose to a team outside of the top 10 or so. Mm. Never. And in basketball, the top teams could lose to a team who's like 60th.
Yeah.
In the tournament. And St. Peter's, again, I don't know what they were, and mm-hmm. the power rankings and all that stuff, they're probably like 200th going into the tournament. And they beat Kentucky. So that happens. That kind of variability does not happen in football. And so I think that does make the basketball thing harder just because you have to win six games against good opponents, increasingly better opponents, with that kind of variability thrown in too. But I think the football thing is harder to build to the point where you have the chance to do it. Because of the transfers and the recruiting stuff, I think it's easier to do it in basketball. But
yeah, exactly. Yeah, I agree.
All right, and our last email is from Auburn Tweep, who says, this team in January 2022 was probably the best Auburn team ever. Mm-hmm. Is there anything that can be done to prevent a team from peaking too early?
I don't know. I mean, because you want to play well, and if it's January and you're playing well, you don't know you're peaking. Remember, we kept saying we could play better. How many times did you say this team hasn't gotten close to its peak yet? But it turned out it had, and we just never kind of went further. We kind of coasted out on what we were doing in January, and I mean, I don't know whose fault that is or if it's anybody's fault.
Again, you're right. You always want to optimize what you're doing so that it's as good as it could be at the time you do it. You don't want to say we want to save some stuff.
Yeah, no.
Right, in basketball. You want to play as well as you can now. Mm-hmm. And I mean, again, I think there are teams that peak too early because of injuries or the players get worn down. And I don't think that happened to this team. I think it was kind of the opposite. We thought the depth of the team and Flanagan coming back from injury and getting to the point where he would be his past self would be the extra gear. Those two things combined would give this team the extra gear in March that we thought they could have.
Yeah.
And neither one of those worked the way we thought.
No. And I felt like, honestly, I felt our guard play, which is so important as you head into March, went down. I felt like Zepp wasn't shooting as well as he had just a few weeks earlier. I felt Wendell's offense dropped more than anybody. He was an offensive weapon in December and January. And by the end of February, he was almost invisible a lot of the time, you know?
Yeah, I agree. And I think Jalen Williams had a great game against Miami, but I think Jalen Williams and Flanagan and what's his name, the other bench guy that's come in at small forward and missed some three-pointers down the stretch.
Cambridge.
I think they really they struggled, I feel like, those three down the stretch a lot. Mm-hmm. You know, I think...
Well, Cambridge's offense completely went away.
Yeah, I think he used to be an offensive player, and I think he basically was a dunk guy or a missing a three-pointer guy the second half of the season, and none of us wanted him to see him shooting from the outside.
No, no, God no.
I think it's... He's gotten worse at that. And so I think, I think it was the kind of thing where we thought the depth was an advantage, but if we had played those guys less to play, you know, Jabari and Kessler, Jalen Williams more, you know, I don't know. So I think the peaking too soon thing is, I think it's impossible to predict. I think it's because of injuries. And again, I'm going to say this. I think the perception of this team peaking too soon is colored by the fact that the schedule was backloaded with tougher games.
That's
true.
If
the tougher games had been spread out, the Arkansas and Tennessee games, if they had been in early January, then we would think this team peaked early. It was just the schedule got much harder the last 2 weeks.
And peaking is only something you can know after the fact.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It's like, like you said, up until the season is over, you think you're still climbing. When the season's over, you realize, well, gosh, we never got to the top. But you can only know that later.
Or we were playing at a higher level back there, and we thought there was a higher level coming, like we said, but it didn't come.
It didn't come, right. So, but again, you can only know that when it's said and done. It's hard to know something like that while it's happening, other than as individual performances, which like we were talking about. And I just felt like, you know, KD fought like a demon to the end, but he was very limited. They just weren't letting him doing anything. It felt like in the last couple, 3 weeks of the season, at least, it felt like all of our players had offensive liabilities and defenses were starting to figure those out and clamp down on them. They shut KD down except for a few little stretches. They shut Wendell down completely. As I said before, when you pass the ball six times and the open man is Devin Cambridge at the three, you're like, maybe you need to pass it one more time, you know. And then
Then you saw teams in the last couple of weeks, like when Wendell was on the floor, they were like, oh, we're taking advantage of him on defense. And you saw Miami do that. So
yeah. So well, it'll be a different team in a few months. And we will see, you know, who's gone and who comes back and who we add. And we'll stir that pot around again a little bit and see what comes out and have brand new memes ready to roll and we'll have fun. And
that's again, what we're not going to stop having fun with basketball because it's too fun and it's going to get – and that, the thing that I will take away from the season – we could talk more about this in the coming weeks about the things that we would take away. But to me, the how much the fans enjoyed watching this team – and how hard it was to get a ticket to home games. And then so then Auburn fans took their show on the road and bought all the tickets to road games. And the Auburn crowds you could hear on TV at the road games, I think, were huge.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So we're not rebuilding anymore. We're reloading. And that's a very good feeling. And I think that's where I want to leave it is we're not a rebuilding program anymore. We are a reloading program, thanks to Bruce. And it's just good to know that we will probably be really, really good again next year.
That's right.
There's not going to be any of that drop off like in the late 80s or in the early 2000s or anything like that. So, all right. Well, I think we can leave. Is there anything I've left out?
Other than a bunch of coaching changes on the basketball side of the SEC, but.
Oh, yeah. Any of those we need to mention? Georgia's coach is gone and they hired Florida's coach, right?
Right, and it turns out Florida was kind of like, we don't really love him. So then Georgia hired him, and they're like, okay. So then they hired the San Francisco coach.
Oh, yeah.
Who we saw do well in the tournament. Again, who is a former Bruce Pearl assistant. So Bruce Pearl is ecstatic that guy got that job. And then LSU today hired the Murray State head coach.
Oh, I missed that one. Wow, okay.
Mm-hmm.
I knew they finally ditched their strong-ass offer guy finally.
Will Wade, you know, Mr. Cashbag is gone. But the big thing with Will Wade leaving is there are several five-star commitments to LSU who have now decommitted. And they are out there, and Bruce Pearl is going after them, so look out.
They're not getting their strong-ass offer from LSU anymore. That's just too bad. All right, I guess we'll leave it there then. We'll be back with you next week to talk about to have another perspective and what's going on with the spring practice, I guess. So, all right, John, our time is up. We thank you for your loyal, John.
Bring it, man.
Thanks for listening to the AU Wishbone. Find links to everything we do at www.auwishbone.com. For more Auburn fun, join us on Twitter at @AUWishbone and at facebook.com/AUWishbone. War Eagle.
The AU Wishbone is produced by Van Allen Plexico and John Ringer. Copyright 2020.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.
Thank you for listening to the AU Wishbone podcast.